Hello and welcome to Filling the Sink, a podcast from Catalan News. My name is Leah Villaiva, and today we're talking about assisted reproduction. Years ago, on July 12, 1984, the first baby was born through assisted reproduction in Barcelona and in all of Spain. Back then, the news of a couple seeking help to conceive at the Barcelona Deseos private hospital made headlines everywhere. But since then, much has happened as assisted reproduction became available for free through the public healthcare system across Spain in 2006. Today, the Spanish government estimates that around 10% of all babies born in Spain are the result of assisted reproduction. On today's podcast, we will be looking into the system of assisted reproduction in Catalonia, how it has evolved over time, what the different types of treatment mean, and why it brings people from all around the world to Catalonia. And for the first time in Filling the Sink history, this episode will be the first of two dedicated to one topic, as it is so extensive that we felt it needed more than just one. And I'm joined today by Kilian Shields. Welcome back, Kilian.
Thanks very much, Leah. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm excited to get into this topic, share all of the research that we've been doing over the past couple of weeks.
Me too. So before we get into the depths of assisted reproduction, we need to start with the basics and just define what is assisted reproduction.
That's a good square one starting off point, no?
Yes.
Basically, assisted reproduction is the process of using technology, using science, to help people have children. Some of these processes include freezing eggs and also semen, IVF, that's probably one of the most popular, one of the most well-known processes. This involves taking the egg out, fertilizing it in a lab, and then inserting again the fertilized embryo. You've also got artificial insemination, the ROPA method, which is the reception of oocytes, which is the scientific word for eggs, basically, from the partner. So very similar to IVF, really. You've also got egg donation, and as well, another method that falls under the umbrella of assisted reproduction is surrogacy, but that is not legal in Spain.
That is not legal in Spain. And the benchmark law that made assisted reproduction possible, it came into effect in 2006. Since then, it has also been expanded on. But in general, today, every consenting woman or person with reproductive capabilities over the age of 18 can benefit for free through the public system from assisted reproduction.
Yes, that's exactly right. The public healthcare system here allows for 3 IVF attempts, 4 artificial insemination with the partner's semen, or 6 artificial insemination with donated semen. But there are some limitations that the public healthcare system puts on who can avail of these services. So anybody over the age of 40 who can become pregnant, that's the cutoff point, 40. If you're above that age, you're no longer eligible for that. While for men, the person providing the semen in the case, the age limit is 55 and they cannot have had children in the past. And there's also a wait list of approximately 1.5 to 2 years. And Leah, I think it's probably fair enough to say that you know a lot more about this topic than I do. So if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you to sort of be my guide a little bit. You also mentioned the law that kind of regulates assisted reproduction in Catalonia and in Spain. Can you give me a little bit more detail about that?
Yeah, so the first law was introduced in 2006, as I said, but the application of that law, that was different from region to region. And single mothers and queer couples, they didn't have access to fertility treatment until 2016.
2016, that's really quite recent, actually. Yeah, a lot more recent than I kind of anticipated.
It really is. It's only 8 years ago. And this change, it only came about when the Catalan government introduced a new protocol to the law. And then later on in 2023, so that means last year, the so-called Ley Trans or Trans Law was approved by the Spanish government. And that law made fertility treatment available all over Spain and for trans people as well. So far, obviously, we have only talked about the public system, but there's also a very large private system. So how does that work, and how much does it actually cost to get fertility treatment?
Right, yeah. No, this is a pretty important distinction, I think, to make, because obviously the private system, it's actually a lot more commonly used by people looking to start families with this technology. There's obviously less restrictions on age. There's actually no waiting time at all, as opposed to 1.5, 2 years. But of course, it's going to be a lot more expensive. The public system is free, but the private system, it's going to depend obviously on the clinic and on the exact procedure. But in terms of numbers, how much does it cost? At the low end of the scale, we're talking about €600 for artificial insemination and around €5,000 for IVF without insurance. And repeat, this is the low end of the scale. It's only going to go up from there, depending on the clinic. And really, this whole industry is, it's big business. Last year in 2023, counting all of Spain, there was €820 million spent on fertility treatment, with the vast majority of that going to private hospitals and clinics.
Right. And you talked to Dr. Ana Vega just recently. Tell me a little bit more about her and why her contribution to assisted reproduction is so important.
She's a biologist, doctor, scientist, and she was the leader of the team who carried out the first ever IVF birth in all of Spain. And that was 40 years ago this month.
And you asked her what her memories of 40 years ago are.
The time where we put in place the first IVF program in the country was very exciting.
Needless to say, Dr. Vega considers the birth of Victoria one of the major achievements in her career.
There were very few standardized protocols, so it was quite a difficult time for us because we had to study things, to try to find out what were the best solutions, the best methodologies. For me as a biologist, it was something really very, very special to be faced with the initiation of life. This is how we are all created, and this process until IVF was put in place was absolutely blind and dark for everybody. We did not know how this worked in the human. We had animal models, but it was not the same. So as a biologist, for me, this was not only a challenge, but also a big opportunity to work in something that was really exciting. I was passionate about what we were doing at that time.
But Ana Vega got so much more than career merit from that historic procedure. Over the years, Ana and Victoria have developed a close personal bond.
Vicky is a very special person for me, as you can imagine. I mean, my professional life is before and after the birth of Vicky. It's not my daughter. She's obviously not my daughter. She is a very good friend, and I think that we have a very special relationship. We have followed each other since she was born, and at the beginning, in fact, Vicky's parents came to Teixeus a couple of times or three times every year, especially at her birthday, so we could see her, and my contact was mostly with her parents. Now it's mostly with her, and I think we love each other, and we have a very special relationship that cannot be described in any other case.
4 decades on, the procedures and techniques surrounding IVF and assisted reproduction have changed greatly.
It has changed a lot. It's a field that has gone very rapidly into not something else, because it's the same initial technique, but progress has been very, very much done to try to provide better results and also to adapt to the different situations that a couple can have. We are now treating male factors. We are doing biopsies in embryos to try to assess the genetic constitution. There are many completely different things that have been growing around IVF that allow now this technique to be useful for a very high percentage of infertile couples.
As the field has evolved, the type of patient seeking this type of treatment has also changed in these past four decades, according to Anna.
At the time we were working in the 80s, in 1980s, we were treating infertile patients because of problems in their fallopian tubes, because problems in ovulation, because problems as male factors. It's not that now these problems don't exist anymore. They also exist. But most of the patients that are now going into assisted reproduction, into IVF, are women that have no more oocytes available to get pregnant because they are too old. The age where women have their first children has been increasing and increasing for different sociological reasons. And in any case, what happens now is that a big percentage of cases that are being done in assisted reproduction centers are done because of the age of the woman. And this is something at the end that we cannot solve. I mean, girls start their life with a fixed number of eggs. And that's it.
With so many centres of excellence, Catalonia is a world leader in assisted reproduction technology. And Dr. Ana Veiga has no doubt about that.
Barcelona and Catalonia has always been, an essential place for good medicine. We were pioneers. In fact, we were pioneers here in Barcelona, and the field has expanded like mad. So I think this is something that we must be proud of, because our presence in international forums, in international research related to assisted reproduction is very good. So this is something that we must be proud of.
Thanks to Ana Veiga for speaking with us. The first IVF baby that you just talked to Ana Veiga about is Victoria Ana Perea Sánchez. And she just spoke at a press conference. Let's hear what she said.
Me parecía como muy extraño hablar de ser madre a partir de los 40.
And Victoria, or Vicky as Ana Veiga sometimes would call her, she just said that when she was growing up, she wasn't used to seeing 40-year-old women becoming mothers for the first time. But thanks to this technology, it's something that has become more and more normalized. And that's also something that Anna talked about in the interview, that more people, they seek out fertility treatment today because people, they get older before they start having kids. And Veiga, she mentioned socioeconomic reasons, something that other experts call structural infertility. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so effectively this is women who stop having children for social reasons. So there might not be any sort of biological issue between the woman or the partner, but other kind of outside reasons force them to make the decision to not have children. Stuff like work-life balance, the cost of living, job instability, difficulty finding housing, just outside stresses that basically mean that maternity, paternity just isn't really a realistic factor in people's lives in that moment.
Mm-hmm. And when do women start having children in Spain?
Yeah, these are some numbers that we were looking up, and they're really, really interesting, really, to take a look at the long-term trend and how they've evolved. So on average in Spain, women have their first child at just over 31 and a half, and that is data that we have from 2021. If we go all the way back to 1978, the average age then was 24.8 years. So that is a huge development. Like, women having their first child are becoming significantly older in that time. Mm-hmm. Back in 2021 as well, for all of Spain, 30% of all pregnancies took place when the woman was between 35 and 39 years old, and more than 10% took place when the woman was over the age of 40. Look back at history for a comparison. In 1993, the proportion of women over the age of 40 having their first child was only 1.8%. So you can see, again, just drastic differences. In Catalonia, things are slightly different. The averages are actually slightly higher. So the most recent data that we have is for 2023, and the average age of the women having their first child was 32.6 years old. And back in 1975, the average was 28.3. So again, pretty late, but you can see that evolution very clearly over the decades.
For sure. And in addition to that, people also have fewer kids than they had before.
Yes, exactly. This is another thing that the data is showing us very clearly. Back in 1975, Spain had the highest fertility rate in all of Europe, with a woman having on average 2.77 children. And not even 20 years later, that birth rate had dropped to 1.13, one of the lowest in Europe, in only 13 years of a difference. Since then, it increased a little bit by the time that we hit 2008. And then something pretty seismic happened all across the continent, all across the world.
The economic crisis.
Exactly. And this is absolutely fascinating, the data for this. We can see very clearly just at that point, 2008, things changed completely. People started having far fewer children, and also the average age went up significantly at the same time as well. So the average age of parents having their first child was actually pretty stable at between 30.5 and 31 in the little more of a decade between 1996 and 2008, before rapidly rising every year since then up to 32.65.
But these low fertility rates and later age to have kids, is this only a Spanish and Catalan thing?
Well, not really. It varies between country and country, but the European average is 1.46 live births per woman in 2022. Malta is the lowest with 1.08, while France is the highest with 1.79. But overall, since the 60s, there's absolutely been a generalized decline. Almost two times fewer children were born in the EU in 2022 compared to six decades ago. So the trend is very clear. The trend across the board is going down. But Spain is definitely on the lower end of the scale in terms of how many children people are having.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And as Anna and we also mentioned before, as people they get older, it also gets increasingly more difficult to have children without any sort of help. And according to the World Health Organization, one in every six couples, they have some sort of problem with fertility.
Yeah, exactly. In Spain, I think you mentioned this earlier on, almost 10% of all children born are born thanks to fertility treatment. So it's really a big thing. In all of Spain, there are 308 clinics in total operating, with the majority of those, 65%, operating in Catalonia, Andalusia, Madrid, and Valencia. So there's so many children being born with the help of some of this technology. Families are seeing the possibilities more and more every single year. Just some numbers that we have between 2019 and 2021, there was an 8.5 increase in the amount of people seeking to begin some sort of assisted reproductive treatment. So yeah, this is a thing that's just getting bigger all the time. It's getting more and more popular. It's getting more and more commonly spoken about in society.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually not only just local people that get fertility treatment. There's also this topic of reproductive tourism. And that is something that you know a lot about, Killian.
That makes it sound like I've gone somewhere to have children in another country.
You did a lot of research on this.
I have, yes, exactly. A lot of people, this is really interesting. A lot of people come specifically to Spain and Catalonia to have their assisted reproductive treatments, their procedures done over here. There are a few different reasons for this. Generally, the tradition of medical excellence here is very high. There's a very high concentration of clinics operating that have very good reputations. But probably the biggest thing would be the laws, the protocols. Both Spanish law, Catalan law, they're some of the most liberal, some of the most permissive in all of Europe.
Right.
Now, we should point out as well that there are some things that are actually illegal in Spain as well that cannot be done. Despite the laws being quite open and liberal, there are some limitations on it. And that is surrogacy. That's one of the things that is absolutely not permitted here whatsoever. Selection of sex as well. So this could be in situations where the embryo is growing, some testing is done on it, and then the sex of the baby is found out. It is not permitted to then abort that fetus. And another thing that is illegal in Spain is knowing the donor, and that could be a donor of anything, egg, sperm, whatever, with one exception for ROPA method cases.
Exactly. And you talked to Dr. Federica Mofa from the Barcelona clinic Fertilab about the different methods that they offer and also the question of reproductive tourism.
In Fertilab, we have 70% of the patients are coming from abroad. So we have really most of our patients coming from France and Italy.
Dr. Mofa says there are various reasons which make Spain and Catalonia particularly good places to come to undergo assisted reproduction treatment.
And here you can find high technology and very updated treatments and physicians and biologists that are very skilled. The legislation is, I would say, open, but also very well done. So in Spain, not only heterosexual couples can have access to assisted reproduction, but also female couples, so homosexual female couples, and single mothers. Okay, and this is something that is not the case in different countries. Another other techniques that are really accessible to all the patients are genetic testing. When we speak about genetic testing today, we apply especially the screening for chromosomal abnormalities.
So how do assisted reproduction treatments work cross borders? How long does this process take, and how long will people need to stay in Barcelona for?
We do everything almost everything remotely. So the first consultation will be online, of course. So normally patients, they perform all the medical tests in their country with their gynecologist, and then they send all the results to us. We set up all the treatments, that is maybe 1 or 2 weeks, depending on which treatment they have to do. When they're ready for the procedure, they fly to Barcelona and they have to stay in Barcelona 1 or 2 days. Some patients, for example, from US, they prefer to fly here and maybe stay 1 or 2 weeks to do all the monitoring with us because it's easier. But European patients, speaking especially about Italians, French patients, they really, really come the day of the procedure and they don't need to stay longer.
All in all, quite a quick process and always carried out in a language that the clients are comfortable with.
All the doctors, they speak at least 2, 3, 4 languages. So this is one of the requirements.
Most patients that come to Fertilab have already tried IVF in their home country and now want to try something else.
And they are more towards the, after 35, 37, towards 40, okay? And this is one of the main reasons why they maybe come here also to do IVF with genetic testing of the embryo. We are able to test the embryo to look if they have some abnormality like Down syndrome or abnormalities of the chromosomes. We also have other categories of patients that are maybe younger, but they come here because they are single mothers and female couple.
The doctor explains that there are some limits that Fertilab put on who can and can't go for treatments at their clinic.
We actually have an age limit for IVF with own patient eggs at 44. This is because based on scientific data and of course the fact that with IVF the probability to have a baby born with IVF after 44 is virtually zero. We consider that is not worth and it's not good practice to perform IVF later. And for egg recipient is 50, with maybe some exception if the patient already had pregnancies and she still have embryo frozen in the clinic. So we can go exceptionally up to 51.
Thanks to Federica Mofa for speaking with us.
Fertilab is only one, as we mentioned, of many, many clinics operating here, but it's the one that we have some figures for as well. So Fertilab work with more than 1,000 women every year, helping them to start their family projects. And as we've heard, it's a very international facing, it's a very reproductive tourism kind of business. And in the past couple of years, they've helped people from more than 70 different nationalities coming over to Barcelona and starting their project. Roughly one in three treatments are to help women actually freeze their eggs to become pregnant later in life. And kind of interestingly as well, Fertilab is one of the first clinics in the world to publish their birth rates. Mm-hmm. So their success rates in carrying the embryo to term and an actual child being born from it.
Yeah, because that's actually not a common practice among clinics. Mm-hmm. Most of them, well, they do these things where they put up a number, which is a calculation of different things.
And that usually ends up being 95% or higher.
Exactly.
To sell this image.
Exactly. So if you're looking into doing fertility treatment, I think you have to be mindful of the numbers that you see on different websites. And in Spain, there's an organization called Reproducción Asistida. The website is reproduccionasistida.org. And on this organization's website, you can find more information about assisted reproduction. You can find ratings of the different clinics, both public and private, because they also conduct different types of audits. So they actually look through all the fine print of all the clinics and figure out what the ins and outs are of everything. And now it's time for the Catalan phrase of the week. What is it this week, Killian?
This week we've got donar a llum.
Donar a llum. What does that mean?
To give to light. Literally, word for word, that's what it would be translated as. But it actually means to give birth. That's how you say to give birth in Catalan. Donar a llum. To give to light. That's how you'd say it.
It's a fantastic phrase. In reality, it sounds really, really good.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, the baby entering the world, it's the light is what they're seeing for the first time in their life when they leave the womb.
I mean, it's poetic and it's also kind of realistic.
Yeah.
And that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. Please do subscribe to Filling the Sink wherever you get your podcast if you haven't already. Thanks again to doctors Ana Vega and Federica Mofa for speaking with us. Thanks to you, Killian.
Thanks for having me, Leah. Thanks for all the information and the help.
You're very welcome. And to remind you, this is the first of a 2-episode special on assisted reproduction. So we will be back again next Saturday with another episode of Filling the Sink, where we will talk with some of the women who have received fertility treatment here in Catalonia. On behalf of the team here at Catalan News, I'm Leah Bilaiba, wishing you a great weekend. Fins aviat. Adeu.